It's Monday, January 4th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, tensions flare between Saudi Arabia and Iran following mass executions. Israel's prime minister says a terrorist cell has been broken. Also ahead, President Obama plans to address gun control this week. And 2016 begins with the loss of a popular singer. It's all on today's International Edition. Iran's supreme leader said Sunday that Saudi Arabia will face divine vengeance for its execution of Sheikh Nimr al-Nimr, a prominent Shiite critic of Saudi Arabia's ruling royal family. Iranian state television quoted Ayatollah Ali Khamenei as saying, "The unjustly spilled blood of this oppressed martyr will no doubt soon show its effect, and divine vengeance will befall Saudi politicians." Saudi Arabia now says that it is severing ties with Iran after an attack on the Saudi embassy in Tehran. Iran's supreme leader said Nimr neither encouraged people into armed action nor secretly conspired for plots, but the only thing he did was utter public criticism rising from his religious zeal. Saudi Arabia carried out the series of 47 executions Saturday involving mostly Sunni extremists, but the inclusion of a top Shiite leader is stoking tensions with regional nemesis Iran, as Edward Uranian has more for VOA from Cairo.
Amin Muhammad Abdullah Al-Agala,
the Saudi news channel Al-Akhbariya read the names of the 47 men executed Saturday, most of whom were alleged Sunni militants. The inclusion, however, of a top Shiite religious figure, Sheikh Nimr al-Nimr, appears to have provoked a regional and international backlash. Saudi Interior Ministry spokesman Mansour Ben Turki insisted that the executions were justified and that they were carried out in accordance with accepted practices. He says that 43 of the executed men had blood on their hands and that they were executed in the presence of witnesses, including a doctor, after their identities were confirmed. Saudi Justice Ministry spokesman Mansour Kafari blasted critics of the executions, arguing that their condemnations were unacceptable. He says that any meddling in the Saudi justice system is unacceptable because justice is a matter of sovereignty and it is the right of a state to enforce its laws. He adds that outside parties are free to express their views, but not to question the fairness of our justice system. Iranian Foreign Ministry spokesman Hussein Jaber Ansari, however, blasted Saudi Arabia for executing Shiite cleric Sheikh Nimr al-Nimr, who was condemned to death in 2014. The Saudis will pay a heavy price for this act, he said. Sheikh Nimr frequently criticized Saudi authorities for what he alleged was discrimination against Shiite residents. Iran's Arabic language Al Alam TV claimed that Saudi security forces have deployed in the Shiite region of Qatif, where supporters of Sheikh Nimr have called for civil disobedience. The TV channel also showed video of an alleged protest in a Shiite district in the Gulf state of Bahrain. Dubai-based analyst Theodore Karasik tells VOA that the execution of Sheikh Nimr is likely to have major implications, especially in Bahrain, Kuwait, and the mostly Shiite Saudi eastern province. He adds that Iraqi Shiites are likely to be upset as well, and that things could get out of control in Yemen with the Houthis firing missiles or an Iranian reaction in the Gulf. Khatar Abu Diab, who teaches political science at the University of Paris, argues that Saudi leaders are sending a strong message to Iran, which they believe is fomenting trouble among Shiites in the Gulf, while Iran believes that the Saudis are making trouble with Iranian Sunnis.
C'est un message dur de la direction saoudienne, c'est un message aussi politique. The app argues that Sheikh Nimr's execution is likely to inflame sectarian tensions all across the region and that attempts to calm the situation are doomed to failure. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
Angry Iranian protesters stormed the Saudi embassy in Tehran and also a consulate, smashing furniture and setting fires at the embassy in the Iranian capital before being ejected by police. At least 40 protesters were arrested. Iranian President Hassan Rouhani called the attacks on the diplomatic missions totally unjustifiable, even as he denounced Riyadh's execution of the 56-year-old Shiite cleric. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon said he was deeply dismayed by the execution of Nimr and the 46 other people and called for calm and restraint in reaction to the executions. The United States warned that Nimr's death would only add to the strife between religious sects in the region. It's time for us to check out reactions online. And to do that, we have G. Abby Lee right here in Studio 22 with us to tell us what each side is saying on Twitter. Hello, G.
Hi, Jim.
I can only imagine how controversial the tweets are on this. Mm-hmm. Let's begin with the Iranian side.
Sure. Iran's Supreme Leader Ayatollah Khomeini tweeted several times Sunday, and as you know, he doesn't mince his words. His handle is at Khomeini_IR, but Twitter has yet to verify that account. The pinned tweet, which shows up on top of the page, reads like this: "Awakening is not suppressible." And he included three hashtags about the late Shiite cleric. In his other tweets, he continued to refer to Sheikh Nimr al-Nimr as a martyr. Khomeini added he has no doubt God will revenge the quote-unquote oppressors who killed him, obviously referring to the Saudi royal family. He went on to argue the Saudi army is oppressing Bahrainis, which strikes me as a move to garner support from outside of Iran.
Interesting. Well, from social media, does it look like the tension is spreading quickly across the region?
Absolutely. It's almost a global issue at this point. There are photos of British Pakistanis protesting outside the Saudi embassy in London on Twitter. And as you said, global leaders are condemning the mass execution. The spokesperson to the UN Secretary General, Ban Ki-moon, tweeted a link to Mr. Pan's statement, which you referred to earlier. The UNSG wrote he's deeply dismayed by Saudi's decision. Also, a Jordanian prince named Mr. Hussein also raised questions about the trial's due process.
So how's the Saudi government reacting to all this?
Very proactively on Twitter. The Saudi embassy here in D.C. tweeted, "The country denounces hostile Iranian remarks." It's on Twitter at Saudi Embassy USA. The Saudi Foreign Ministry is also sending out many tweets on this issue. Back to you, Jim.
Well, thanks for the update. You can follow G. Abby Lee on Twitter at her own handle, at G. Abby Lee. And, of course, she also tweets for us. The International Editions team Twitter account is at VOA_IE. I'm out there as well, at VOA Stevenson. Follow us all. We'd love to have you. This is VOA.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
Hi, I'm Larry London, and I'm the host of Border Crossings, inviting you to join me for one of the best hours of request music possible on the radio. We've got all your favorite songs by your favorite singers. You tell us what to play. It's requests and dedications, and it happens every weekday right here on The Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. Israel says it has broken up a Jewish terror cell responsible for a deadly attack on a Palestinian family. Robert Berger has more for VOA from Jerusalem.
An Israeli court has indicted two Jewish militants for an arson attack on a Palestinian home last July that killed a toddler and his parents. The assailants allegedly threw firebombs into the West Bank home as the family slept. The indictment said the suspects were members of a Jewish terrorist organization. They were identified as a 21-year-old West Bank settler and a minor. The Israeli Justice Ministry said two other Israeli males were indicted for other terrorist activities against Arabs and their property. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has vowed zero tolerance for Jewish terrorism. He told the cabinet that Israel is a state of law that will enforce the law against all perpetrators of violence and murder. Nevertheless, Palestinians believe the case exhibits an Israeli double standard. They say Palestinian assailants are quickly apprehended by Israeli security forces, while Jewish militants have carried out attacks for years with virtual impunity. But Hussein Dawabsha, the grandfather of the slain Palestinian toddler, says the indictment is a step in the right direction. Dawabsha told Israel Radio he is happy that two of the perpetrators were indicted and he is hoping for additional arrests. The question is whether the indictments will ease tensions on the ground. The arson incident is widely seen as a catalyst for a wave of almost daily Palestinian attacks on Israelis over the past 4 months that has shown no sign of letting up. Robert Berger for VOA News, Jerusalem.
U.S. President Barack Obama returned to Washington Sunday from his holiday vacation, looking immediately to impose new controls on gun sales. Mr. Obama, his wife Michelle, and their two daughters departed the U.S. Pacific state of Hawaii late Saturday night after their annual two-week Christmas vacation in the president's home state. He now plans to meet with Attorney General Loretta Lynch later Monday to discuss an impending executive order aimed at expanding background checks on gun sales. And he is planning a televised town hall discussion of his gun control mandates on Thursday. That's just days before he delivers his final State of the Union address before a joint session of Congress on January 12th. In the studio, we're joined by VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman, and already there are political battle lines being drawn on the president's initiative.
Well, Jim, President Obama has returned from his Hawaii holiday vacation, and even before Air Force One arrived back at Andrews Air Force Base, word had come out that the president is preparing to announce executive action on a whole new front. He's already taken executive action when it comes to immigration, and now he's going to tackle a topic that is equally politically explosive, if not more so, and that is gun control.
This has been a very tough topic and thorny, as you mentioned, for several reasons, mostly because of the string of mass shootings that have happened over the last several years and the calls by members of Congress and the public at large for something to be done.
Right. And therein lies the rub. The question is whether the something that should be done should simply be to provide greater health treatment for those with mental illness, or whether we actually need to do something about the access that citizens have to firearms and the ease of that access, and to what extent the government needs to be vigilant and needs to weed out those who may have some history of doing violence. This would be the background checks. And there are background checks in place for most gun purchases, but there are loopholes. There are gun shows around the country. And people can go to these gun shows and buy almost any firearm that they want without going through the background check. And it's been pointed out that even these background checks do not screen for things that in the year 2016 maybe should be screened for, such as those who are on the terrorist watch list. So there's been an argument that these laws need to be strengthened, that loopholes need to be closed. The problem is that Congress has shown no ability whatsoever to address this in any concrete fashion, much the way that Congress has been unable to address immigration reform. This is yet another occasion when President Obama seems to be on the verge of taking matters into his own hands. One can only imagine the fight that this is going to bring about at the start of an election year.
And of course, in this country, it's important to note that there are so many dynamics in play in all of these issues. You have lobbyists going for all sorts of different angles, trying to convince lawmakers to cast their votes one way or another. You have states' rights and the power of the states to create their own laws, or the federal government to impose a law that covers the entire land. And then the Constitution also comes into play, especially with gun control, as a lot of people who advocate the right to own firearms go right to the Second Amendment.
Absolutely. The Second Amendment is here to stay. That's not going anywhere. And it's up to the courts ultimately to look at whatever President Obama does and decide, because there absolutely will be court challenges to this, just as there are court challenges to the immigration-related executive orders. There will be court challenges to this, and it will be up to the federal judiciary, perhaps all the way up to the Supreme Court, ultimately, to decide whether what President Obama wants to do in terms of his own powers, whether he is entitled to do so as a matter of executive privilege, and whether he's entitled to do so as a matter of constitutional law.
There's no court challenge when it comes to sitting with Mike Bowman each week, our VOA Senate correspondent. Mike, we're happy that we have the free and fair opportunity to speak with you. Thanks for dropping by.
Happy New Year, Jim.
And Happy New Year to you, Mike. President Obama is entering the final year of his presidency. He is set to leave office in January 2017 after 8 years in the White House. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
No sooner did we start 2016 than we learned of the death of Grammy Award-winning singer Natalie Cole. She is the daughter of jazz legend Nat King Cole. She died at the age of 65. International Edition's Steve Norman looks back at her life and career.
Unforgettable, the near.
Like a song of love that clings to me. How the thought of you does things.
Unforgettable, written by Irving Gordon, was recorded by Nat King Cole in 1951, the year after his daughter Natalie was born. It was a huge hit for Nat, and an even bigger hit when Natalie Cole recorded a virtual duet of the song with her father in 1991. 26 years after he died.
And forevermore.
And forevermore.
A statement from the Cole family said Natalie died Thursday at Cedars-Sinai Medical Center in Los Angeles from ongoing health issues. The statement said Cole fought a fierce, courageous battle, dying how she lived, with dignity, strength, and honor. In quoting her most identifiable song, the family also said, "Our beloved mother and sister will be greatly missed and remain unforgettable in our hearts forever."
Anyone has loved me. Oh, I'm so glad he found
And I'm so glad that I rectified my mind. This will be an everlasting love for me.
Natalie rose to musical success in the mid-1970s as a rhythm and blues artist with hits like This Will Be.
Just how much you care. You've given me the thrill of a lifetime and made me believe you've got more thrills to spare. Oh, this will be an everlasting love. Oh, yes, it will now.
Even with her success in R&B and pop music, Natalie Cole's career always remained wrapped around her father's. Nat King Cole died in 1965 when Natalie was away at boarding school. The two were very close, and throughout her career, Natalie Cole paid tribute to her father by creating virtual duets like When I Fall in Love.
And the moment I can feel that, you feel that way too, is when I fall.
Thanks to International Edition's Steve Norman for that very nice tribute. You have been listening to International Edition. You can find us at our website. It's voanews.com. Also, please, if you like, follow us on Twitter at @VOA_IE. We're so happy to begin our new year with some great veterans, our engineer Daryl Smith and director Tracy Carter. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you have a super day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
December 18th, the United Nations unanimously approved Resolution 2254, which is to serve as a roadmap toward peace in Syria. By approving Resolution 2254 today, this council is sending a clear message to all concerned that the time is now to stop the killing in Syria and lay the groundwork for a government that the long-suffering people of that battered land can support, said Secretary of State John Kerry. After 4.5 years of war, this is the first time we have been able to come together at the United Nations in the Security Council to embrace a road forward. Resolution 2254 reaffirms the Council's endorsement of the Geneva Communique of 2012 and a transitional governing body with full executive authority, establishes a timeline for a transition and an election, and the standards for that election, and calls for a nationwide ceasefire in Syria as soon as possible. Under UNSCR 2254, the purpose of negotiations under UN auspices planned for January 2016 is to facilitate a transition within Syria to a credible, inclusive, non-sectarian governance within 6 months. The process would lead to the drafting of a new constitution and arrangements for an internationally supervised election within 18 months. The resolution also urged all members of the International Syria Support Group to use their influence to press actors on the ground to positively respond to requests for humanitarian access and, most importantly, for all to put an end to the daily horrendous attacks on civilians. The key, said Secretary of State Kerry, is that the process must be led, shaped, decided, and implemented by the men and women of Syria. It cannot be imposed from the outside, and we are not seeking to do so, he said. We have agreed on a plan of action, and the Council's vote today is an important boost on the road to a political settlement. Let us proceed with confidence from here and a determination to end this war, eliminate the terrorist threat, and enable the people of Syria to return safely to their homes.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.